Penguin Random House Audio presents Raising Demons by Shirley Jackson. Read for you by Kirsten Potter. For Lewis Scherr. I conjure and command you, O demons, all and so many as ye are, to accept this book with good grace, so that whensoever we may read it, the same being approved and recognized as in proper form and valid, you shall be constrained to appear in comely human form when you are called, accordingly as the reader shall judge. In no circumstances shall you make any attempt upon the body, soul, or spirit of the reader, nor inflict any harm on those who may accompany him, either by mutterings, tempests, noise, scandals, nor yet by lesion or by hindrance in the execution of the commands of this book. I conjure you to appear immediately when the conjuration is made, to execute without dallying all that is written and enumerated in its proper place in the said book. Conjuration from the Grimoire of Honorius. 1. I do not now have the slightest understanding of the events which got us out of one big white house which we rented into another bigger white house which we own, at least in part. That is, I know we moved, and I think I know why. And I know we spent 3 pleasant months in a friend's summer home, and I am pretty sure we got most of our own furniture back. What really puzzles me, I suppose, is how a series of events like that gets itself started. One day, I went to clean out the hall closet, and the next thing I knew, we were trying to decide whether to have all 4 phones put on one line, or leave them all different numbers and list ourselves 4 times in the phone book. We decided wrong, by the way. What with the phone starting to ring for Lori at 8 in the morning, and for Janny about noon, and for Sally in the early afternoon, and every now and then a high, uncomfortable voice stammering and usually hanging up unexpectedly for Barry, we know now that we should have left the 4 phones separate. We should have listed 3 of them for the children and kept the 4th one private, giving out the number to the 2 or 3 people who either have no children of their own or are still optimistic enough to try to telephone their friends. We had rented the big white house for 9 years. Sally had been born while we lived there, and so had Barry, and the kitchen needed repainting. The stairs and the walls and the positions of the light switches and the crack in the glass of the front door had all become affectionate and familiar to us. Lori knew the bike routes to everywhere in town from the house. Janny could cross the street to play with a friend. Sally had slept in Janny's old carriage on the front porch where Barry now slept, the shadows of the pillars moving slowly across the plaid carriage robe. All the millions of things we possessed as a family were inside the house, but, inexorably, there came one shocking moment when we discovered that the house was full. I went, one spring morning, to clean out one of those downstairs half-closets, which begin as very practical affairs, meant to be the resting place for wet boots and umbrellas, and end up as containers for ice skates, and then hockey sticks, and then tennis rackets, and then, by the most logical of extensions, baseball gloves and football helmets and basketballs and riding boots and jackets left behind by visiting children. I had picked up a big cardboard carton at the grocery, and into it I put the baseball gloves and the football helmets and the riding boots and the tennis rackets and the basketball. I put the carton at the foot of the back stairs, so I would remember to take it up the next time I went, and I put clean newspaper on the floor of the closet and went and got all the wet boots from the corner of the kitchen and the spot inside the front door and the back seat of the car, and I lined the boots up in the closet and derived an enormous satisfaction from closing the closet door tight for the first time in months. Later, when I went upstairs, I took the carton with me. There was no room for it in the bedroom shared by my 2 daughters. There was no room for it in the bedroom of my older son, and certainly no room for it in the tiny room where the baby lived. There was no room for it in the attic, where we kept sleds and garden rakes. There was no room for it in the attic where we kept trunks and boxes of things I meant to give away someday. I knew there was no room for it in the garage because I had tried a day or so before to put the snow tires in there and had finally to put them in the cellar. Consequently, there was no room in the cellar because I had barely been able to squeeze in the snow tires. I was not going to leave a carton of football helmets and a basketball in the bedroom which my husband and I shared, particularly since there were already 16 cartons of books in the corner next to my closet, and I could not leave it in the upstairs hall because there were 9 more cartons of books lined up along that wall. Anyway, I knew if I left a carton of baseball gloves and football helmets and a basketball right out in the front hall, it would only be a day or so before I had to gather them all up again from the living room and the kitchen, and I would probably have to put them all back into the hall closet, and then the door would not close again. With a certain feeling of bewilderment and a strong sense of the inevitability of fate, I took the carton back downstairs and put everything directly back into the hall closet. And, of course, the door would not close. I could not find anywhere to put the empty carton, so I took it outside and left it for the garbage man. A day or so later, I decided to put away the winter clothes in mothballs, but the closet I have always used for winter storage was full of boxes holding the baby's clothes and gifts people had sent him, because there was no closet in the small room where we put the baby. It occurred to me that I could put the winter clothes away in a trunk in the far attic, but when I finally got the attic door open, I discovered that the trunk was full. My husband had cleaned his filing cabinet, and when there was no place to put the papers and correspondence and clippings, which were too important to be thrown away, but not of any immediate usefulness, like our old college yearbook and the copy of our marriage license, he had carried them up in the laundry basket and put them all away in the trunk in the far attic. I thought that I might buy a cardboard closet to put the clothes away in, but there would be no place to put a new closet, since both the attics were full, unless I put a closet in the baby's room and moved the baby's things out of the moth closet, and then put the winter clothes in the old moth closet. But then there would be no place to put the baby, because there was only just room enough in his little room for his crib, and I had to take him in on the girl's bed to dress him. We had 3 more attics, but one of them was full of old lumber and bricks left over from the various additions that had been built onto the house, and one of them was full of bats, and the last could only be reached by climbing through a trapdoor in the ceiling of the next to the last attic, and even if I could get past the bats and through the lumber and bricks, I did not think I could keep taking the baby up and down through a trapdoor. That night at dinner, my husband remarked that he wished he could get to his place at the dining room table without having to squeeze so past the buffet. Either he was putting on weight, he pointed out, or I had moved the table. I said that now we had the baby's high chair in the dining room because there was no place to put it in the kitchen, I could not possibly have the dining room table any farther away from the buffet because if there were any less space around the kitchen doorway, I would not be able to get in and out at all, and no one would get any dinner. My husband said why not give all the children their dinners around the kitchen table, thus making considerably less congestion and confusion in the dining room at dinner time, and I had to explain that if I put chairs for all the children around the kitchen table at dinner time, I would have to go around through the study to get from the stove to the sink, and Lori added indignantly that that was a fine thing that was to expect him and the girls to eat in the kitchen and let the baby eat in the dining room. After dinner, Lori had a friend in to watch television, so my husband and I had to sit in the study. Janie came in to read in the study because the boys asked her please kindly to let them alone while they were seeing the Western movie. Sally was asleep upstairs with the lights out, so Janie could not read in bed, and the light in the dining room was not good enough to read by. With 3 of us in the study, someone had to sit in a straight chair, so I thought I might as well get some mending done and let Janie have the comfortable chair with the reading light. When I went to get my sewing basket, I found that it was full of walnuts the children had brought home. They had not been able to find any place to put the walnuts until we decided what to do with them, so they had put them in my sewing basket, which was already pretty full of socks. Later, when I went upstairs to look at the baby, I perceived, seeing almost for the first clear time, that both sides of the staircase were lined with things, books, sweaters, dolls, boxes of crayons, which had been put there temporarily and then left because there was no place else to leave them. I came downstairs and went into the study and stood in front of my husband until he put down his book and looked at me. We have too much stuff, I told him. Dolls.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?